Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century.
We are back. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm very excited about this hour because we're going to be visiting with someone that has agreed to join us. His name is Bob McTeer. Dr. McTeer is the president and CEO of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. He's a member of the Federal Open Market Committee. He was in 99. He'll rotate off, I guess, this year. We'll get him to tell us about that in a little bit. He received his BBA and his PhD in economics from the University of Georgia. He went on to start his career with the Fed at the Baltimore Fed, and we'll get him to tell us about that. Also, in just a minute, he's the president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. Dr. McTeer, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you here. Dr. McTeer, I'd like for you to start out with, my audience knows that we've talked about the Fed before. We've had some folks who are very familiar with the Federal Reserve Board and the Fed come on the show and talk to us about what you guys do. But I wouldn't mind if you would take just a couple of minutes and tell us why do we need a Fed, and then tell us a little bit about what the Fed does.
Okay. Well, the Constitution gave to Congress the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. That's the way they put it. And essentially, Congress exercises that power through the Federal Reserve. It created the Federal Reserve in late 1913 to do that.
Mm-hmm.
With the gold standard breaking down, there had to be some entity to control the quantity of money and act as a stabilizing influence on the economy. Over the years, we've gotten about three different roles. One of them, of course, is monetary policy, which is, I guess, what we'll be talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't realize that we support the basic infrastructure of the nation's payment system. We have a nationwide check clearing infrastructure through which banks clear their checks. We are one of the three federal banking regulators, along with the FDIC and the controller of the currency. Most of the people that work at Federal Reserve Banks, and there are 12 around the country, and those 12 have 25 branches, most of those people work in these payments areas of checks, cash, transfers of funds, and so forth. Some work as bank examiners, and relatively few are economists and various support people for monetary policy.
Right.
Of course, that is what makes us unique and what makes us the central bank.
Now, you're the president of the Dallas Bank, the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. What do we need with regional banks? What does the Fed need with regional banks?
Well, I suppose if they were designing the Fed from scratch today, there would be fewer regional banks because technology and communication and transportation is quite different than it was back in 1913 when the Federal Reserve Act passed. The Federal Reserve Act said there would be 12 banks, and they were located basically in transportation hubs, railroad hubs back at that time, and their regional presence was primarily needed for things like distributing coin and currency and clearing checks and doing those sorts of things.
Wasn't a whole lot of electronic transfer back in those days, was there?
Not a lot, but it was beginning in the 1920s, and
yeah.
Of course it's blossomed now. But let me say, Jim, that even though you wouldn't need a regional structure for the monetary policy role of the Fed, we do believe that is very valuable to us. If we were just operating out of Washington, we would probably become just another government entity. But the way it works is we have regional boards of directors drawn from the private sector of the local communities.
Right.
And they sort of oversee the operations of the Fed, not just the 12 reserve banks, but the 25 branches as well. They operate as local eyes and ears when we're looking into what's going on in the economy. And they keep us from being a Washington entity. They keep it spread around. So we're a decentralized central bank, and we believe that that regional structure serves us very well.
Well, I do too, and we've talked about that on the show before, the way that, you guys, at the, by having those tentacles out there, so to speak, those worker bees, and I'll give a couple of those worker bees a name in a minute. We've found how the Fed finds out what small business owners have got going on in their lives, and it allows small business owners to roll up some of our thoughts and our ideas and our concerns all the way up to the Fed, all the way up to the committee, the Open Market Committee that you served on in 1999. A couple of the worker bees that you may recognize who've been on the show before are Paula Lovell, who is the deputy, I guess she's vice president or deputy chairman, I've forgotten how you would say it, of the Atlanta Bank.
Yeah, deputy chairman of the Atlanta Bank.
Of the Atlanta Bank, and Paula's been with us. In fact, Paula's going to be back with us next week to talk to us about women in the marketplace. Also, Whitney Johns is in one of those worker bees that to use my term, she's the chairman of the Nashville branch of the Atlanta Bank.
Right.
And they've been on the show before. And one of the things I'd like to do, Bob, I'd like to tell my audience that even though you've got a Ph.D. in economics, and we've got some other mutual friends I haven't mentioned yet who've told me that you are in fact a world class economist, and that's something I wanted my audience to know. But there's something else about you I want them to know. I want them to know a little bit about your origins. Your father was a small business owner, and you worked in that small business, didn't you?
Yes, I basically grew up in his small business. My father was an eighth grade dropout, and he dropped out of school to work in the sawmill and to haul lumber out of the mountains of North Georgia and things like that. But he got the, what we would now call the entrepreneurial urge at one point, and he opened up a small filling station. And he saved up a little money, and then he opened up a truck stop on the main highway at that time that connected Knoxville, Tennessee with Atlanta, Georgia.
In those days, main highways were two lanes, right?
That's right. Very dangerous. His trick on that was he found a place at the top of a hill so that he figured by the time the trucks got up the hill, it would be pretty slow anyway, might as well stop.
And maybe even need some service.
Right. And then they'd get a good running start back down the other side of the hill. So
that's location, location, location.
It
right?
Really is. So I grew up at that what they call Doyle Truck Stop. Doyle was my dad's name.
Yeah. Stand by, Bob. Folks, we're visiting with Dr. Bob McTeer. He's the president and the CEO of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. When we come back, we're going to get Bob to tell us what goes on in those Federal Open Market Committee meetings. I've been wanting to know for a long time. Stay with us. We'll be right back. 888-822-8255. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 888-822-8255. And think about it. When was the last time you had a chance to pick up the phone and call in and talk to a member of the Federal Reserve Board, someone especially the president of a Federal Reserve Bank, which our guest this hour, Dr. Bob McTeer, is? He's also on the 1999 Federal Open Market Committee, the folks who set the rates, the interest rates that we all have to live by, eventually, indirectly. Bob, I have waited a long time to ask somebody this question. Would you tell us what goes on inside of one of the Federal Open Market Committee meetings?
Sure. We have, incidentally, eight of those meetings a year, and six of them are about half-day meetings, and two of them in February and July go over 2 days, although they're not two full days. And they're normally on Tuesday. They start at 9 o'clock. The people sitting around the table would be the 12 Reserve Bank presidents and normally seven members of the Washington Board of Governors. So it's a committee of 19.
Mm-hmm.
Right now there are two of those governor spots vacant, so it's only 17. You really can't tell during the meeting which of the 12 presidents are going to be voting. As you know, the voting rotates among the 12 presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And I vote every third year, alternating with the Atlanta and St. Louis president. And 99 was my third voting year. I voted in 93, 96, and 99. When the meeting starts, the chairman calls on a representative from the New York Fed who actually runs the open market trading desk, both domestically and internationally. and he gives a report on what he's done in the open market since the last meeting to carry out the committee's instructions. That's a fairly detailed report. He also talks about latest developments in the financial markets and in the international financial markets that he deals in. And so that's a very interesting lesson every time. And it's fairly routine in that he's talking about the past. And then the chairman calls on, I guess you'd call him the chief economist there in Washington of the Board of Governors. He's the one that's in charge of putting together all of the packets of information on all the statistics on the economy, and also their forecast and the results of their modeling and so forth. So we've already received most of this material back at our banks before we go, and hopefully we've digested it pretty well. But he goes through and hits the highlights of that verbally. And then we start what we call the go-around. We raise our hands and get on the little list of the secretary who's sitting beside the chairman there in order that we raise our hands. And they call on us one at a time. Normally the presidents will start their part out by talking about what's going on in their local districts, any changes since the last time, any straws in the wind that would indicate that there might be a change out there or an inflection point in the economy, bringing in any new factors. And then after they talk about the district, they won't review the whole national scene because everybody knows about it. Mm-hmm. But they'll focus on what they consider significant about what's going on nationally, especially since the last meeting. And toward the end of that, the governors, the five or the seven governors, raise their hand, and they basically limit theirs to the national and international development, since they don't have a region to report on.
Right.
So that that goes all the way around, and then we usually have a coffee break, and then when we come back, the chairman will call on another one of the senior staffers to sort of lay out his view of what the alternatives are for monetary policy and what the implications are. Normally, there would be a slight easing alternative with a lot said about what the implications of that would be in financial markets and so forth. Then there would be a no change alternative, and then there would be a slight tightening alternative.
The good, the bad, and the ugly, huh?
Right. Every now and then where it's, you know, you just know you wouldn't go in one of those directions, you might just have two alternatives of no change and and whatever the likely thing would be.
Bob, stand by. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to get into to the real meat of this issue, and that is what goes on when they vote on whether to raise interest rates or not. And I can't wait to hear what Bob Mateer has to say about that. Bob is the president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank and a member of the 1999 Federal Open Market Committee. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, 888-822-8255. Thank you very much for joining us. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and when you go there, be sure to sign up for my newsletter. It comes out weekly, and it comes by email, and it is free, so be sure to sign up for that. Dr. Bob Mateer is the president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank and a member of the 1999 rotation of the Federal Open Market Committee, and that's what he was just talking to us about. And by the way, let me give you the number to call if you'd like to, if you have a question or comment, 888-822-8255. Bob was talking to us about what goes on in the Federal Open Market Committee, and Bob, I really value what you just told us, but we're just about to get to the real nitty-gritty of why you guys show up over there.
Okay, well, as I was saying, we start out with a bunch of reports and bring us all up to date, and then we all go around and cover what we think is going on in the country, and then when we come back, we get a little orientation to the alternatives that we're going to be considering for policy. And in that last round, Chairman Greenspan starts it off by giving his own take on things.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't participate in that first go around, but he does in this last one.
Do you get the idea that maybe does he get to do that because he's the boss, or do you think maybe he's trying to influence people?
Well, that's the way he leads, by being the most knowledgeable person and the wisest person in the room. He certainly never throws his weight around.
Yeah.
But he is the best economist in the room and the most experienced at reading the tea leaves, and he's very persuasive. But the thing I enjoy about his participation in the FOMC meetings is that he's so creative. When he talks about the economy, he usually has an insight or two that you haven't read in the newspaper and you haven't heard around the table up until that point. And once you hear him talking about it, you realize that that's the key, you know. And so he outlines where he thinks things stand, where they're going, and what he thinks we should do about it. And then from that point on, we have another go-round, but at that point it's cast in terms of whether we agree with him wholeheartedly or whether we wish he would edge more, whether he would zig or zag just a little bit.
Yeah.
And usually he's outlined a course of action that most everybody feels very comfortable with. And normally, even if you went into the meeting thinking something differently, if he doesn't persuade you, still you're not as likely to have such a strong disagreement as to finally disagree on the vote. But at the end, they do call the roll, and all of the governors vote, and five of the 12 presidents vote. Up until that point in the meeting, you wouldn't have been able to tell which of the presidents were voting members and which were alternates.
Right. So what you're saying is everyone attends, but only five of the 12 district regional presidents vote. And, of course, you all know who you are, but you're all at the same meeting. It's just that you don't always get to vote.
Right. We not only all attend, but we all participate fully.
I see.
There's no distinction made in participation.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Voting numbers.
All right. So now we're coming to the vote.
And then we vote. And normally it's a unanimous vote. Normally it's an easy vote because everybody sort of knows what the economy is doing and whether the present settings of monetary policy are appropriate or whether they're beginning to get a little outdated and need some fine-tuning.
Well, now, wait a minute, Bob. You just said normally that it's a unanimous vote, and I think normally is the operative word here because there have been a couple of votes in 1999 where at least one person didn't go along with everybody else. Would you know who that person might be?
I'm afraid it would be me.
And folks, now you know why. Now you know why, folks. I told you that he was a fellow traveler. Anytime anybody votes against raising interest rates that causes small business owners to have to pay more in interest on their and take more money off their bottom line, that person is a fellow traveler. And Bob, on behalf of small businesses all across America, we want to thank you because twice in 1999, you voted against raising interest rates.
Yes, well, thank you. I voted against the decision on June 30th and then again in August. I believe it was August 17th. Those were the first two hikes in rates this year.
And you were the only...
You give me too much credit for that.
No, you were the only one, weren't you?
I was the only one.
Now, folks, that's courage.
It was a close call.
That's courage. I mean it. I'm not blowing smoke on you, Bob. I admire that, and I'll tell you what else. My audience admires that.
Well, the thing you got to remember, though, is that sometimes, if you want interest rates to be low, you have to go ahead and raise short-term interest rates if it's needed to cut into inflationary psychology. I mean, you can't just keep voting to hold interest rates down if inflation is, in fact, building up.
Yeah.
Because when inflation builds up, interest rates will follow right along. And the only rates we really control in those meetings are the overnight lending rates of banks when they lend to each other.
Right.
The Fed funds rate and the Fed funds market. The market actually determines all other interest rates, but that is a key rate, and it does influence very short-term rates. if we're doing it right, and the market trusts us to be anti-inflationary, then the market will determine a fairly low set of long-term rates. But if the market decides we're being too easy, if the market decides that we're pumping money out too fast and holding interest rates down below market too long, that could cause interest rates to rise. So it's a very delicate thing. And
I like the way you say the key is knowing when to zig and when to zag.
That's right.
I like that. Folks, we're going to get him to talk about that and some more. I'm going to ask him what the Fed is really fighting these days. Inflation is missing in action. When we come back right after these messages, 888-822-8255. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Bob McTeer is our guest for the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. The phone number is 888 888- 800-822-8255. And my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Folks, there's another website I want to recommend to you. I've spent some time on it in the last week or two, and it's the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank's website, their portion of the Fed's website. Bob, do you have that address handy?
It'd be www.dallasfed.org.
DallasFed, F-E-D, .org, and not gov, org, right?
Org.
Okay, O-R-G. Check that out, folks. There's some great articles. If you want to get a little bit more information on how the president of that bank, Bob McTeer, who's our guest this hour, if you want to find a little bit more about what he's got on his mind, some great articles in that site, and be sure to check that out. That's DallasFed.org. Bob, as we were taking the break, I was congratulating you on your positions that you took last year, in 99, in the Federal Open Market Committee. You actually voted against raising interest rates. You were the lone dissenter, and you said something pretty interesting in that decision that I'd like for you to talk to us about.
Well, it's kind of touchy for me to talk about my dissent sort of off the cuff, but it has been published in the minutes, so it is in the public domain.
Yep.
So if it wouldn't bother you too much, I can just tell you about my dissent by reading it.
I would very much like for you to do that.
Okay, well, this is out of the minutes of the June 30th, 1999 meeting, and it comes at the end, right after the vote. It says, Mr. McTeer dissented because he believes tightening was unnecessary to contain inflation. He noted that most measures of current inflation remain low, and he sees few signs of inflation in the pipeline. Conditions that call for a preemptive tightening in 1994, which were rapidly rising commodity prices and real short-term interest rates near zero, are not present today. While money growth has been rapid by historical standards, market-based indicators of monetary policy suggest sufficient restraint. Except for oil, most sensitive commodity prices have risen only slightly after years of decline. The dollar remains strong, real short-term interest rates are near historical norms, and productivity growth has accelerated in recent quarters. Mr. McTeer does not believe that rapid growth based on new technology, rising productivity, and other supply-side factors is inflationary, especially in the current global environment. He would have preferred to continue to test the growth limits of the new economy. That's the end of that.
Well, that just makes a chill run up my spine to hear you say that, Bob. And the reason I'm saying that is, about that same time as I was having our FedWatch show that morning, probably that information was being recorded, you know, I was saying to my audience and to our guests that day, hey folks, what is inflation? The Federal Reserve, we know the Federal Reserve has a lot of roles, multifaceted role in our marketplace. But there's one thing that you can be said that the Fed is obsessed with, and that's hunting down and eradicating inflation. Now, here's my question. Inflation has been a non-issue for some time now. Bob, what is the Fed hunting these days?
Well, it's still looking for inflation, but it's hoping to catch it before it sees it. It tries to be preemptive because it's a lot tougher if you wait till it gets out of control and then deal with it. It's better to try to do it in advance.
Well, I use the little bitty corrections approach. To me, that's the way I like to describe what you guys are doing. And I really do admire Chairman Greenspan, and I admire what you guys have done, all of you at the Fed, Bob, because you've really been making what you just said when you said they're trying to fix something catch something that they haven't seen yet. That's what I call making little corrections rather than big corrections. And as you know, when you make little corrections, often you don't have as big a pendulum swing, do you?
Right. It's like making your car go straight by continually moving your hands on the steering wheel.
Exactly. And I like that approach. And one of the things that I know you like to talk about a lot, and that you basically mentioned in that narrative that you just read, is productivity. That's the real sleeper. That's the surprise dividend, isn't it, in this whole thing?
Yeah, and it's been very key to monetary policy lately. The thing about productivity, and we define that as output per hour worked, is that for two decades it was very stagnant. Beginning in 1973 and up into the early 90s, output per hour worked grew only 1.1%. And that's basically what raises our standard of living. If we're producing more simply because there are more of us, that may help a little, but not a lot. What really helps raise our standard of living is that we get more output per hour work. So that was stagnant for about two decades, and people don't really understand fully why. But in the 90s, it has begun to revive, and in the last 4 years, it has more than doubled from that 1.1%. It's actually been growing between 2.5% and 3% in the last two or three years.
What do you attribute that to?
You've got to remember that if you go up from 1% to 2%, that's not a 1% increase. That's a 100% increase.
That's right.
And so we've had almost a 200% increase lately, and it is one of the main reasons that we've been able to grow faster with less inflation. We've had in the last couple of years inflation down around 2.5%, and growth for the last 4 years has been over 4%. And it wasn't that long ago that people thought those two things were not compatible. And what's happened that has made it compatible is this pickup in productivity that's based on this technology revolution that's going on out there. We're going through a fantastic period of revolution in technology that has boosted this productivity.
Bob, I got to interrupt you. We got to take a quick break. Folks, it's 50 after. We're going to be right back to finish up the hour with our new friend, Dr. Bob McTeer, the president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. Stay with us, please. And we have absolutely been having an outstanding visit with Dr. Bob McTeer, the president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. By the way, folks, the way I found him was through an article that he wrote and was in the Wall Street Journal, the most recent one. And the article is titled, Believe Your Eyes, The New Economy is Real. And when I saw that title, I said, hey, I want to find out about this because this is interesting, especially when I found out that he was part of the Fed. And when I read that article, and I commend it to you folks, I recommend you try to find that article. And if you don't have a copy of it, if you want it, let me know and I'll make sure you get one. But that's an outstanding document, and Bob, I really appreciate you taking the time to put those kinds of thoughts into the mainstream so that the rest of us can see it.
Oh, well, thank you.
I want to ask you a question. You were talking about your position, and you and I agree that technology has made all the difference in the world in productivity. When I started my small business 10 years ago, I had a computer, and that computer and I were doing the work of five people. That's productivity. And now here's my question to you. How much of a role has monetary policy, the work that you guys do in the Fed, how much of a role has that played in helping or hurting technology? Have you guys been good for that or bad for it?
Well, I think we've been good for it. Monetary policy wasn't so good back in the 70s when the inflation got out of hand.
I remember.
We had an inflation psychology where any businessman could, if his costs went up, he just raised his prices. And he could depend on his competitors doing the same thing.
Right.
There was no discipline. Now that inflation has been worked down to very low levels over the last two decades, businesses don't really have that option anymore. There's not as much pricing power. And because of that, they're forced to look for cost-cutting methods to keep their profits. So it's the removal of pricing power that's caused businesses to have to go for new technology as a way of remaining profitable rather than just raising prices like they could do in an inflationary environment.
So what you're saying is that instead of getting higher prices and saying, okay, my competitor is having to do the same thing, he's got the same expenses, so I'm going to raise rates because I know he's going to raise rates, and we'll all raise them together. What you're saying is now we're saying, I wonder what my competitor is doing technologically to not raise rates.
Right.
And so I better be looking at that same thing.
How we're going to keep our prices nearly constant and lower our costs to keep profits up.
Absolutely. Bob, I've still got 100 questions. Will you come back another day and let me ask some more of these questions?
Oh, sure, so long as it's not real close to an FOMC meeting.
Well, I understand, and I really want to get you back. In fact, maybe we can get you back in the next few weeks or so, but I do want to give you a chance to talk to us about Y2K.
Well, I don't know a lot about Y2K in the broad sense, but I know that the Federal Reserve has been working on its own very important internal systems for several years now, and they're all tested and ready to go, and we're very confident. And
the banks are ready, aren't they?
Basically, the payments mechanism in the country. We also have been monitoring all the banks under our jurisdiction and making sure that they've been doing what they need to do.
But even so, you guys have pumped a lot of cash into the marketplace just to be ready.
Yes, we've printed up at least $50 billion extra dollars to be in the vaults of all the reserve banks and their branches, And we even have a lot of that money stored in strategic locations around the country.
Yep.
Outside the Federal Reserve, just so no business is very far from cash. We don't think that's necessary. We don't think it'll be used to any great extent, but better safe than sorry. And so we're very confident that as far as the banking system and the payment system goes, Y2K will probably be a non-event.
Bob, that's got to be the last word. Bob McTeer, thank you very much for being here. Looking forward to having you back. You were great today.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Bob McTeer, ladies and gentlemen, with the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.